Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Well, you're not Rick Hale.
I am not, but I still can't get this booger off my finger.
Well, just don't type, you know, if Jamie walks by, wipe on it. So,
I did.
Okay, good. So we have Bert Coates sitting in tonight for Rick Hale. Bert is from NWPIA. How are you doing, Bert?
I'm doing pretty good, other than this booger on my finger.
You know, I had a total that's what she said moment during our show intro, and I've never had that before. As it said, it's time to explore the unexplained, I thought, well, that's what she said. It's never occurred to me before that our tagline is kind of dirty.
It is, and I think we should change it to that's what he said.
Oh, well, okay. It could go both ways, right?
It could, because we're a diverse radio talk show.
That's right. So we are going to be talking to Sean B, and we are going to be talking about exorcisms, which makes me think that starting devil music that Cheryl just played was really appropriate. Did it sound like devil music or exorcism music or something to you?
You know, I feel like I'm in hell right now.
And your wife is sitting next to you and just absolutely whacked you, didn't she?
No, she gave me the bedroom eyes.
Well, then you'll be out of hell in 2 short hours, just as soon as we're done with this radio. Yeah, really.
See you guys in about 1 minute.
Really, that long? 30 seconds and I'll be back. And so you've been doing a little studying up, I understand.
I have. Sean B. is a very interesting person. Very interesting. And he likes, what, Harleys? He has a Sportster 1200. And his wife is a spiritual photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it sounds like an interesting household.
Yeah, definitely. And he wrote the book, 2012, A Paranormal Problem. And you haven't read it, have you? I have a copy. I sent the copy to Rick, or I would have given it to you. Shoot.
Well. Give it back.
Well, yeah. You know, it took me months to get it sent to Rick, which is why I didn't get it read before the last time Sean B. was on. Hey, you know what I just realized? Sean B. is our first actual repeat guest on this show. Now, you have sort of repeated because you've been a guest and you've been our second part of the hour lightning round guy, but our actual main guest, I think Sean is our first repeat. Is that right, Cheryl? Is he our first repeat?
Yeah, I think he is.
Hey, that's kind of cool.
It is. So, he's a cool guy.
So, hey, I want to know if you guys noticed that there's anything different about me tonight.
You're
definitely.
No longer have a kidney stone.
Oh, that's what it was.
I know.
Alert.
It actually last week during the show. Remember when we were all talking at the end of the show after we had gone off the air and I said, I gotta go, kidney stone. That was what was happening, apparently.
Now, did you name the kidney stone or did you just enroll it in school right away?
We did name it. We named it Seabiscuit. Mm-hmm. And I either have to drop it off at the doctor to be analyzed or take it to preschool. And we haven't decided yet which we're going to do. I think that preschool might be cheaper at this point with all of the doctor bills we've had to pay. So,
now, did it have moss on it?
It did not roll much. But I have to tell you, it was tiny. You know, 5 millimeters, it was 5.5 millimeters. That's not very big.
That's what he said.
But it felt much... never mind. I'm going to stop now.
Congratulations, Karen. It must have been really exciting night for you.
Well, you know, do you know what I did? This is probably too much information. I'm sorry, but it hurt, and that's why I left. You guys, I said, because I had to go take drugs. And then I thought, you know what? I could tell exactly where this thing is. And so I drank like a gallon of water, and then I sat there and held it and wouldn't pee for like an hour.
Wow.
I know, and that's kind of what did it, I guess. So anyway.
If you want to party with Karen,
That's right. Well, that is a good sign that I can drink a lot. I can probably still. It comes from my beer bong days. I used to be able to do the beer bong and hold it. And, I mean, you know, everybody else would be puking and everything else. And I wouldn't even have to pee because I'm just that good at consumption. Maybe Rick's right. Maybe I do have a problem. I wonder if I have a problem. I'm not going to worry about it. I haven't taken any drugs in a week.
Nice.
Yeah. So what were you going to say?
Something about, are you sure you put the beer bong hose in the right spot, but never
mind. That's another topic for another show, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So, Cheryl.
Hi, I'm here.
Oh, there she is. So, the magazine is up.
It is. It's up. It's up and waiting to be read.
Okay. And are we, I have a question for you, Cheryl.
Yeah.
Are we covering any regular groups, or are we just covering TV stars in the magazine?
Oh, no. We cover regular groups, if you want to call them regular, and we cover TV investigators, if you will. But actually, we try and cover a paranormal group, a local paranormal group, to wherever they're based, and a TV investigator, because, you know, there's a lot of interest in that as well. We don't always cover both, but we try. And I think this year, in 10 issues, we've done that in about 7 of them. And in 1 or 2, we only covered one or the other. But we definitely cover our hardworking local paranormal groups or individuals. So
that's right.
Check it out.
Okay. All right. Very good. So I put a new picture up on paranormalunderground.net. It's in the blog, and I think it's probably, it's probably the very first blog entry. And it is something that, if you guys want to go look at, anybody who's listening, it's a picture that's from Wellington, which is where Bert has been heavily involved in investigating for 6 years. And Bert didn't take this picture and can't actually see what the other person sees in the picture. But if I'm going to circle it, and then I'm going to put a yellow arrow on it, and I'm going to send it to you with a yellow arrow.
It's age, man. I'm telling you, I can't even, how many fingers am I holding up? I don't know, because I can't.
How many fingers? That's what she said. 11. So last week was fun. We had Aaron Goodwin on, and I really enjoyed that. Yes. Chad just asked in the chat room if I have a cold. I have a cold. So I got over the kidney stone, and now instead I have a cold. And so I sound like one of those nerdy kids, you know, who talks like this all the time. That's kind of how I sound now. Sorry. Also later, J.D. Harrison's going to come on. And you haven't met J.D., Bert, but he is an archaeologist.
Nice.
And, yeah, and he has some really interesting takes on, well, pretty much everything as far as paranormal. He likes to look at it from a cultural and historical perspective, as those cultural anthropologists will do, I suppose. And he's going to be talking about exorcism.
Wow.
I know. Wow.
Interesting. Where'd you dig him up at?
He's here all week, folks. Tip your waitress and buy the veal.
I just flew into Seattle, and boy, are my arms tired.
Hey, you know who's in Seattle today?
No. Who?
The president.
There you go.
The president. I'm so glad I don't have to drive up there now, because I bet you traffic is just a tangled, snarled mess up there with old Barack up in Seattle. And you know who was in Seattle also last night, even more important than Barack Obama?
The Lakers.
Chip coffee. Right.
Yeah. Boy, Barack Obama and Chip coffee together. Now,
do you suppose that they met?
I don't think so. I don't think the Secret Service would get anywhere. Chip coffee would be way off, you know, like 520 area. He would just, he'd be in a minivan somewhere.
I like Chip coffee. I actually was going to go up everything that was going on
One of our investigators,
the kidney stone and you know, family obligations and work. I decided not to go. What were you going to say?
Yeah, Jenny Brown is going to go see Chip coffee. Maybe she's there now, or she was planning on it.
I think it was last night.
It was last night. My producer, aka wife, is whispering things to me.
I heard that, and I was hoping that she was talking about Chip Coffee and not trying to pull you away for another 30 seconds, because no. You know, the last one was hard enough for me to vamp all the way through. That's right. If you just hear me talk on and on and on and on, it's because Bert has slipped away.
I am. Yeah, I'll be back in like 15 seconds.
Yeah, definitely. So, hey, Cheryl, were we gonna go to Sean at 6:15? Was that our plan?
Yeah, we can go to Sean whenever you're ready.
Okay, well, let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and Bert, who has been doing his studying, is going to interview Sean, and I'm just going to sit here and listen with a smile on my face.
That's great.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Thank you. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ztalkradio.com.
So we have a little devil music playing in the background because we're going to introduce our guest. We had a little change in plans. We couldn't get a hold of Sean B., so we're going to go to J.D. Harrison first, and J.D.'s going to talk about exorcisms, which is why the devil music. Hey, J.D. Okay, now J.D.'s not talking. J.D.?
Oh, no.
Oh, no, we lost J.D. Harrison. It's one
of those... No, I'm here.
Oh, well, I said hi. You're supposed to...
Oh,
are you there?
Everybody's cutting out.
It's going to be one of those nights. I can just feel it. You know, maybe I should go get back on my drugs.
J.D., are you here? Hello?
So,
we have
Cheryl,
no guests for you tonight.
Tell me about exorcisms.
Well, I saw this movie once in the 70s. It was called The Exorcist.
So,
JD said he's here, but we can't hear him. So I don't know why. I heard him a second ago, and now I can't hear him at all. Hello?
Hello.
Are you talking, JD Harrison? Did you put us on mute?
He says he's lagging.
I kind of felt that way today, too.
Oh, my God. I've been totally lagging all day long. Well, do you want to, drop him and recall him. And Bert and we'll talk about something.
What do you want to talk about, Bert?
Recontacting JD.
The funny thing, you had mentioned exorcisms. We had just seen a movie. What was it? It was on Comcast. It was some free movie.
How about now?
Oh.
Hey!
Hello?
Okay, hey. Let's try that again. I would like the devil music back, and we're going to go back and pretend that this last few minutes didn't even happen.
Hey.
Cue the devil music. Shh, you're not here yet. And now, I'd like to introduce our guest to you. He is an archaeologist and cultural anthropologist, and he is going to be talking to us about exorcisms throughout the centuries. Is that correct, J.D.? Oh, for God's sake, JD! Is it the music?
It's music.
Turn off the music.
The music is gone.
Oh.
I don't think it's the music, but yeah.
How about now, JD? Can you hear me now? Oh, he's listening in the chat room.
Oh, no, JD.
He needs...
Don't listen in the chat room. Go to Skype and listen on your Skype headphones.
Yeah, just a second.
Okay. That could account for the lagging.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Now what do you think?
That might be the issue.
All right.
Yay. Try
that.
So now what do you think? Are you hearing me better? Oh, no. Oh, no. He's still not hearing me. This is, honestly, this is like, I have nightmares about this. This is like walking around... dreaming about going to school without your clothes on or something.
And we're live in 3, 2. So anyway, like I was saying.
So, and knock him off and recall him.
That.
And you were saying about...
Oh, there he is.
You were saying about this...
Are you there?
I am.
No, he said knock him off and recall him. That was Bert.
I'll try.
Right. Okay, so Bert, you were saying about this exorcism movie...
Oh, man, that was like 5 minutes ago. I can't remember. No, we had seen, what was that movie? The Exorcism of Mary Rose? Emily Rose.
Bert doesn't have a little satanic voice there, really. It's just Jamie whispering. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. She's helping me remember things that I've long forgot. Anyway, so we're watching this show. This movie, and it was actually pretty interesting. I don't know if anybody's ever seen it.
I have not.
Oh, it's a free movie on Comcast. You have cable now, right?
Yeah, we switched from digital, whatever it was, DirecTV to cable just this last week. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool because they didn't really go through the exorcism part. They went through the trial of the priest.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, are you live now?
Yeah.
In real time.
I had to drop the chat room when the chat is up. I get like a real long delay, and I was talking to you. You couldn't hear me, and then almost a minute would go by, and it would click in, and you could hear me, but then I couldn't respond anymore.
Oh.
And I went ahead and dropped chat and got off. I just closed the whole thing out, and it's working a lot better now. So,
well,
could have been something with that. It's
what
weird.
A joyous live radio, huh?
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Sorry about that, but yeah, I was here.
Yeah, so for those of you who aren't familiar with JD, he is our science editor, although he's been a little busy lately, but in the saddle, and you're ready to start contributing again, right?
Yeah, trying to. I'm just getting back into things, so yeah, and I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, well, we have a surprise for you tonight, JD. We have the Dybbuk box on. No, I'm kidding.
I got something to do, guys. I'll see you later. we're going to talk about that, though. That's part of some of the exorcism and the beliefs and all that, and interestingly enough, in other cultures, so especially Eastern European, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay, well, why don't you, where are we starting?
Where do you want to start?
Over there.
Okay. Then let's go over there and start.
Let's head over there.
Over there. Go ahead, JD.
I have never witnessed an exorcism, so I hope I don't disappoint anybody, but I have studied a lot of cultural ritual, myth, and religion, and exorcism plays a big part of that, especially in some of the primitive cultures, the shamanistic type cultures. It's an everyday part of their practice, and it's part of their cultural beliefs. But give you a little background, demonic possession and exorcism goes way back. We find writings about it from the Egyptians, the Babylonians, the Sumerians, and a lot of the Christian pantheon of belief, which includes the Roman ritual of exorcism, began with a lot of this, especially the Sumerian and Babylonian. We can go back to look at some of those texts and find the early Jewish or the Kabbalah, and a lot of that was transferred from there into the early Bible. And later, as time progressed, things were developed into hierarchies and all. We'll touch on that, but I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. But you find a lot of that through there. But anyway, their beliefs were interesting. Early cultures like this believed that spirits inhabited everything. Everything in nature, everything in the heavens. They had enough of a sense to have a paranormal belief, so to speak, or a belief in something more than themselves. And there's prayers that we can recover and have recovered on some of the writings and the texts that people have actually asked certain gods to remove demons or evil spirits from them. Now, we associate exorcism and the rite of exorcism with removing devils or demons, demonic possession. But a lot of these cultures don't look at demons, so to speak, although they do, some of them do have demons within their belief system. They do not serve the same role as it does in the Western world or that of Christianity. And they believe they can be influenced by the dead. Spirits of the dead can actually rise. And I mentioned earlier about Eastern European beliefs. And that's where the Dybbuk comes in. The Dybbuk was the spirit of a deceased person who was supposedly evil in life. And that spirit can come back and harm the living. But interestingly, the Eastern Europeans believed, as the Romanians, or we call them gypsies now, that inanimate objects could be possessed by these Dybbuk, or spirits, and thus the Dybbuk box, and that's a whole other story that we're not even going to talk about right now.
Is that because you're afraid?
No, I'm not afraid. I just don't want to talk about it.
Ever again.
Been there, done that.
It probably remembers you. You know, they were our very first guests on this radio show, J.D.
Right. And, you know, I can, for some of you who don't know me, when we did that in our podcast, I came in to this, and I still am. I'm not saying I believe or anything, but I was very skeptical. Jason's a great guy. We talk, and we still stay in contact. And the whole thing was interesting. I did a lot of research on it, and it was extremely interesting. But, you know, that night we started the podcast, and everything went wrong. And after that, I mean, things were just going
to hell.
They were going to hell in a handbasket so fast it wasn't funny.
Well, I mean, yeah, I will say, though, that you are not the only person who's ever had to leave a show because of a tornado warning like you did the night that we did that podcast. Rick has had to leave for a tornado warning before, too. However, it was interesting timing.
Yeah, but do you remember after the podcast in my life? I mean,
I do recall it, quite well.
A couple weeks later, I'm feeling really bad, and I go to the doctor, and I think I have the flu or something, and they're taking these tests and stuff, and that day, and they're like, "You need to come in right away. You have Rocky Mountain spotted fever." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, how did I get Rocky Mountain spotted fever?" Well, apparently, long story short, I got bit by a tick, and ended up with that, and that was terrible for a while, and it was just one thing after another, and it was beyond coincidence, pretty much, and I'm like, whoa, now wait a minute. And then they're telling me to take a sage bath, and I'm like, no, I'm not taking a sage bath. I'm not going
to
do that.
Who told you to take a sage bath?
Jason.
Oh, he did? Really?
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I researched, and interestingly, we're talking about possession here. And exorcism, Native Americans in their shamanistic type culture, they believed, and you see that that's used today, they believed that the smoke of sage could appease an evil spirit and would actually drive it away and bind it.
Right.
Bind it out. And it's funny that cultures who had no contact with each other, like the Eastern Europeans, where this belief also exists, and several others, use sage and other herbal incenses, so to speak, to drive spirits away. And, you know, these people have never had contact with each other, ever. You know, geographic type things, the ocean and all, you know, there's no way they could have had contact. And they even existed at different times, but they use the same principles and practices to accomplish the same thing.
So how do ideas like that spread, in your opinion, then?
There's several theories in anthropology about it, but none of them have been proven. They're just speculation. It's really difficult to make a determination. There's so many ways, but, you know, I can't answer that. I don't know. I really don't know. And I'll be the first one to tell you I don't know. And a lot of anthropologists will tell you that, archaeologists. It seems like shared ideas can pop up within cultures through certain periods, but maybe it's something we haven't discovered yet. Maybe, you know, archaeological records pretty limited as far as things like that, because that would be considered tenuous or an artifact type thing that just doesn't exist and can't be proven. But maybe there was contact. Maybe there was some type of trade routes, but you would think if that was the case, you would find trade goods from these cultures within another culture, and you don't, and that kind of shoots down.
Isn't there some theory about monkeys or something that, you know, the monkeys start washing their hands and pretty soon, or is that an urban legend?
No, that's not urban legend. It's repetitive behavior and it's mimicking. And you see it because they will. And there's people studying this right now where tribes of chimpanzees in the wild are using tools. And we've known that for a long time, and they're watching, and it's just like parent to child. The parent uses a tool to accomplish a certain function. The child picks it up and does it, and it's passed on. The argument is, do they know why they're using it? Well, obviously, they're using it for a purpose, but is it a thought-out process? Well, if I take this stick and stick it into an anthill or termite mound, I'm going to get termites on it. And if I lick the stick, it's going to wet it and more termites are going to stick to it. Do they know that? Or is this a process of just discovery by accident and then repetitive behavior? So that's the type of thing that's going on with that right now. But how the ideas pop up among cultures is up there right now. That's one of the answers that people would look at. But, you know, it's really weird because it ties into this with exorcisms and that type of thing, because one of the tenets in all cultures, regardless, is in order to drive the spirit out, you have to acquire the name of the spirit that's possessing. And you find that in the, everybody's familiar with that part of the Catholic ritual, or the ritual Romanum, as it's called. And you need the name, because there's a belief, and this can be traced back to the Babylonians and the Sumerians, where, and we had a link on the website, on the forum, that talked about this, of speaking the name of a demon. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I thought you weren't supposed to say the name.
You're not. That's a belief, but that's where the belief originated. They believed that names had power, and by using a name or speaking a name, it was enough to draw the entity to you. And also, within a ritual.
Well, you know, if that worked, Sean B. would have made it here, because we were saying his name repeatedly, so it's clearly not true. Okay, go on. Sorry.
That's right. Liv Tyler would have been at my house a long time ago.
Wait, isn't that Steven Tyler's daughter?
But anyway, by doing that, and under a ritualistic setting such as exorcism, they believe that by knowing the name of the demon, once you know the demon's name, it binds to you and you can command it to do whatever your bidding would be, which was one of the beliefs of King Solomon. There's a lot of legends about King Solomon in the Kabbalah and earlier, where he had total control of both angels and demons and could summon them at will and make them do his bidding.
Like and Dan Brown, kind of.
Right, yes.
Right, yeah, just like Dan Brown.
right. But interestingly enough, that evolved, and you can see the evolution of this from Babylonian, Sumerian into Christianity, where Christianity actually assigned names to these entities. The Babylonian, Sumerian entities were recognized by symbol. And this was supposedly recorded, and by the use of these symbols, you were able to call and control these entities, which we see spread throughout different, you know, satanic cults and things like that, heavy use of symbolism and all. And this is where a lot of this originated from. It's interesting. If you're interested in researching some of this, you know, head back to those things. It's easy to come up with a lot of it. There's websites, one in particular called JSTOR, J-S-T-O-R, and it contains a lot of archaeological and anthropological papers, and if you can get through those, they'll put you to sleep. But some of them are very interesting, and they deal with these subjects, and they speak a lot about the history and things, and they make a good research base. But they actually get into scholars who have devoted their lives to this study and have actually translated these texts from the original without bias, which is important because you get a lot of types today who do these translations, and they'll translate it according to their ideas or their worldview and take a spin on it. But without a biased translation like that, you can actually read this content and you're able to pull and glean these things and you can see how a lot of it fit together.
Okay.
So,
well, I was getting a little excited about what you said about the symbol thing, because I was thinking that maybe then I could get some kind of control over the artist formerly known as Prince. Was
yeah, it good his luck. Name? I don't think anyone's tried that yet. I'd like to.
So do I have to know? Should I have to learn what that little? What, does he go by Prince now again, or is he still that squiggly symbol?
I have no idea. He just dropped off the face of the earth, and who knows?
That's
who knows?
Because he no longer had a name.
Yeah, he kind of messed himself up, I think. But, he was messed up anyway. I never liked Prince, but that's just me. No offense, anybody. It's just me, personally.
None. Well, Bert's probably stomped out now because I happen to know that he loves Prince. Don't you, Bert?
Oh, I think Prince is fabulous.
Fabulous!
You know, J.D., I got a question for you real quick. At one point, I think we should... I know that history plays a big part in evolution, but at what point do you think we need to kind of get away from the spiritual stuff and move forward in our education, and leaving that history behind? It's sort of like we keep repeating history itself. And
well, it's not so much getting away from it. That's a good question. I think the question should be, when should we start paying attention to the lessons that history have taught us?
Yes.
We don't. It's in front of us. We see it. Every day we hear about it and we just blow it off. Nobody really anymore, not very many people, will actually use that context and that information that's provided and project it, so to speak, to today and today's lives and today's times. I think, oh, that's old. We don't need to do that. Walking away from history would be the biggest mistake, because that's basically what we've done.
Right.
And, you know, we haven't learned those lessons. You know, there's a this isn't exact, but at best of my recollection, an old adage about insanity. And they say that insanity is repeating the same thing over and over, expecting a different result.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing with history. We look at it, you know, look at the different collapses of civilization, things like that. The things that these people did. And we find ourselves repeating this over and over and over. And it's not so much that we need to get away from it. We need to pay attention to it and then move on.
I see.
And, you know, we're not learning from it. That's the point. Or we're not paying enough attention to learn from it. And that's what we need to do. That's just my opinion.
It's a good opinion.
Well, I don't know about how good, I'm sure.
It's a very educated opinion.
Well, we'll get arguments over that. But, you know, that concerns me a lot. I look at these things, and especially within the paranormal, you know, we see a lot of it in investigations and things like that. And people... this is one thing that I really take seriously with these studies. I know a lot of people don't believe, okay, and they don't believe in a God, they don't believe in demons, things, and that's their right, and they have a right to do that, and they have a right to be respected. Their opinion should be respected. But I've read about a lot of cultures. I've talked to people who have been there. I have a lot of friends that are cultural anthropologists who have went there and done ethnologies and made studies and done things. And these people who go through these things with a demonic possession and spirit actually believe this. And I have read and seen and talked to too many people and seen too many things not to believe. I'm the type of person, call me cautious, whatever, I would rather believe in it and be wrong than not believe in it.
Gotcha.
You follow me? And
yeah.
And I see a lot of this, and what I'm getting at, there's some paranormal groups out there I get concerned with. They go out, they want to hunt a dark entity or negative energy and all this type of thing.
Get dragged straight to hell!
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what, you can get into a lot of trouble that way. Whether... You know, there's too many things that go on. And
Aaron Goodwin last week told us that he thinks that his going to Bobby Mackey and hunting for whatever's there is the reason that his marriage is over. He blames the end of his marriage on this entity that's followed him from Bobby Mackey's.
You know, one of the Catholic priests just was talking about this, wrote about this not too long ago. The church 10 years ago, even 5 years ago or so, 10 years ago, it was very difficult to get a sanctioned exorcism within the Catholic Church. You have to get, still to this day, the priest will go, he will examine the person, and he will look for signs. And there are certain signs within any possession. Now I'm speaking on the Western terms of Christianity, that they look for. And there's various things. One, the person would have a natural strength. Okay. They'll be able to speak in tongues that they've never been exposed to. They will have a telekinetic ability and be able to move things. They also have prophecy. They can look at somebody and predict what's going to happen to them within the near future. And things like this, and there's other things they look for. That's not just all of it. Those are the main, but there's some things, and it gets, with these other subtle things, it gets a little too dangerous to be even talking, and an exorcist will tell you shouldn't expose these types of things, you know, to lay people, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But there's certain sign you look for. Once this is confirmed, they go to the bishop, and the bishop archdiocese has to approve the exorcism. Okay, it was very difficult to do, and 10 years ago you didn't see very many. Now there are more exorcisms and exorcists within the Vatican than has existed at any time.
Really? Why is that?
They're doing more and more and more possessions. More and more exorcisms on a regular basis. They had a group that formed, nothing but exorcists, and 10 years ago there were 6 of them within the world. Now there's over 200. It's a very selective group, and they will only select people. They meet yearly at the Vatican, and they meet solely to select new people. And usually it was by attrition. Somebody would become too old, retire, and leave, and they would replace it with someone else. Now they have over 200. Because they can't keep up with the number that are being approved. Now, I don't know what that means. Scientifically, does that mean that their archdiocese is just like, you know, willy-nilly approving everything? Or does it mean there's more cases of documented possession as far as they're concerned?
You know, or it could be that there are 200 nutbags out there.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. I was trying to be kind of nice about it. But
no, we're not nice about the show.
I've been biting my tongue this entire time. I think that one person's obsession with the church could be another person's mental anguish.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And understand, I'm not Catholic at all.
Oh, neither am I.
And I have nothing against Catholics. I'm not Catholic. But it's just, you know, it's something you keep up with because they are, as far as our culture goes, that is the defining or definitive group that would do an exorcism. And that was popularized.
That you all do for your demonic needs?
Every Sunday at 6 o'clock.
You
so
never
what about
know.
Buddhism?
What about what?
Buddhism?
Buddhism, that's interesting. Buddhism is, they're kind of laid back with their exorcisms.
Yeah,
it exists. It depends on the Buddhist sect, though. Okay? And each sect will have a very different form of exorcism or a very different way of going about it. Some of the sects view it as real. Mm-hmm. Some of them view it as a spiritual type journey, something that needs to be done. And some of them think it's literal, that there's actual attack, you know.
I would like to clarify for a moment, you are referring to S-E-C-T-S, sects, right?
Sect. S-E-C-T, sect.
Sectessa.
You know, this whole time I thought you were supposed to smoke an herb and ring a bell with that.
No, isn't that? That's the Hare Krishna.
It shows you my education on religion is very, very limited. But my wife had asked that question because she's somewhat Buddhist.
Right. Well, basically their exorcism consists of a blessing. And they would rather do that than go through a rite. They don't have it, actually. They don't have an exorcism. They have a blessing. And they rid themselves of property and negative thoughts. And thus, by doing that, the negative spirits go with them.
And how about the Latter-day Saints?
Oh, the Mormons, form of Christianity. But they're kind of different, too. They believe in it. Their exorcism is more, it's closer to Pentecostalism, okay? And Pentecostal church believed that the casting out of spirits, the speaking of tongues, that type of thing. And they
I've been to one of those churches before. Yeah, they're interesting.
They don't perform an exorcism per se. They perform what's called a deliverance ceremony. And it's similar to an exorcism, but their pastor will lay hands on the person.
And somebody plays a banjo in the background.
Well, no.
because that was my obscure deliverance reference. Sorry.
It's all behind closed doors.
I'm sorry, JD. Go on.
Oh, no, you're fine. Anyway, they don't believe that a person who is filled with the Spirit of God can be possessed. So therefore, if somebody's possessed, there's something wrong with them in the first place. Their faith isn't right, and they want to treat the person and drive the demon out who is trying to possess them, because they do believe that everybody, no matter how bad they are, has somewhat of a spirit of God. So they don't believe that a demon or an evil spirit can actually possess a person, but it can try to possess a person, which in possession, there's three stages in Christian possession. First, there is infestation, and that's where the spirit will supposedly enter where the person lives and cause all kinds of havoc.
Could they come in the form of ladybugs?
I guess that's
because we currently have a ladybug infestation, and I wonder if I need to be concerned.
Did you kill them?
We have been vacuuming them up and opening the vacuum bag outdoors.
They'll just come back. If I was you at that stage, if they are, you can kill them with rage. So don't worry about it. You know, go give them rage.
Okay, but I don't have to be concerned that this means that I am in the first stage of possession, which would be infestation. Is this what you
mean? No, the second stage is when you need to get...
Karen, I think you should call the Catholic Church, and I think you need to get somebody in that house. And
get them out here now.
They've got 200 of them, so, you know.
Hey, that's right. I'm sure that there is a convenient one in my area, and I can say, look, I understand that my friend J.D. Harrison tells me that infestation is the first sign of possession, and we currently have a ladybug infestation, so I think you need to come out here and exorcise me.
I really want to get over there and take a look and see what this demon is.
Don't tell him I sent you.
So, hey, let's do this. Let's go to break, and when we come back from break, you can talk about stage two of possession to see. Okay. So that everybody who's got their checklist, I'd like those that are worried like me to be just a little bit on edge for a few minutes, so that they'll listen to our commercials and then be back to find out if they're in the process of being possessed or not. Okay, so go to break. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
that you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the Z-Talk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ztalkradio.com.
Hey, this is Kate Pearson from the B-52s for Red. Getting drunk is your own business, but when you drive drunk, you make it everybody's business. Don't drink and drive. Be responsible, plan ahead, and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you. Love Shack, baby, Love Shack.
Love Shack. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
That's right. Z-Talk Radio Network, the network with the turkey. Now, this music seems much more appropriate than that little tinky-tink music that we were just playing for the subject that we were covering. And J.D. Harrison, who is with us, he's an archaeologist and our science editor at the magazine, was about to tell me whether I am indeed in the stages of possession, because we have already agreed that I have infestation. Now, is that, when you say infestation, could you actually define that, JD?
That's when you're basically infested with the demon.
What does it look like? Because I'm pretty sure it doesn't look like ladybugs.
No. You won't see it. You'll hear it. You'll see things like books on the bookshelf will fly off. You'll have knocks, strange noises. If you look back at some of the...
Well, I live with Jim, and there's all sorts of strange noises that take place in my house, man.
Look at a lot of paranormal investigators. You go in, you hear these things, you know, the knocks, the talking, the voices that you can't make out. Things like there's creepy feelings, you know, stuff like that. You're haunted, basically.
Okay.
That's your infestation.
Okay, But it varies from a typical haunting, because instead of a nice, friendly, happy ghost, it is a nasty, evil, mean ghost.
Right. Usually, like, if the books come off the bookcase, they come at you, or they come at somebody. They'll hit someone, things like that. It can be violent, you know.
Okay, got it.
Somebody or a spirit that's just a little pissed off.
Yeah.
It's demonic.
It's not necessarily. That's why you have signs, you know, because there can be, and there's been recorded... even throughout history, there was one that comes to mind right now called The Drummer of Tedworth. And you can look at that. And people had recorded this. Magistrates from the town came in on at a certain time. They would hear a drumming and marching. And it seemed to go around the table in the dining room. And it disappeared. It wasn't, you know, didn't turn out to be anything. More like a poltergeist type activity, which is an infestation. That's what it would be more akin to. Like a poltergeist type activity. And a lot of these things, though, see, with an infestation, how you can determine that, and this is one of the signs. They usually happen, and you see this in the movies, and there is a reasoning for this, around 3 in the morning, which...
Oh, isn't that on some show, don't they do something at 3 o'clock in the morning? They call right. it the, what do they call it? Dead time.
It's called the witching hour.
Really?
It was given that. Yeah, and the reason it is, and we're getting into this, a lot more of the sign here, a lot of the things that occur, even in infestation and progressing into the next phase, but will occur during that time because it's considered a mockery of the trilogy.
So if Jim farts at 3 o'clock in the morning, I should be concerned.
I would, yeah. I would be concerned at any time, but you know.
Well, that is a large concern. Trust me, there we had a time where we were hiking up a hill, and I was right behind Jim, and my face was right there, and oh yeah, Bert was there, but Bert got to see that.
3 o'clock in the morning, or 3 o'clock? Yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning. Isn't that 3 somewhere in the world? I mean, and
well, that's what I would think, but local time. Your time, it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
So demons can tell local time.
Right. Well, apparently. Because they're not concerned with somebody else in some other part of the world. They're concerned with you right now, here and now. And the reason they do that, it's considered a mockery of the trilogy because traditionally Christian religion has accepted 3 o'clock in the afternoon as the time of the crucifixion of Christ. So 12 hours later is the exact opposite. And you find that in possession. That's one of the...
I can't remember. When did we first start telling time again? Was it before or after Christ?
It was before. I believe the Greeks had sundial. They invented sundials and that type of thing. Water clocks were present.
Catholic.
Even way back now, it was before.
So they could still tell time.
Your answer was so much more scholarly than mine when Bert asked that question.
But, you know, that's one of the signs, the mockeries. There'll be a lot of mocking, and things will occur that's known as sinister sign. Sinister sign is occurring from the left. It comes from the Greek term sinistra, which right. means left. And these signs will come from the left because the right hand of God sets Jesus. So everything would happen from the left. You hear a sound, you hear a knocking, and it occurs from the left of that person. Things like that. And you look for stuff, things that will be thrown to the left of that person.
Oh, thank God, Jim sleeps on the right side of me. I'm okay. Okay.
So those are some of the things you look for in that. And it progresses, it will go to the next stage, which would be obsession. And obsession is when the demon singles...
By Calvin Klein.
Yeah, pretty much. Like
is that it's the perfume?
I hate that stuff. Yeah, but anyway.
Oh, yeah, I don't like it either. Anyway, Calvin Klein, go on.
It's demonic. But anyway, with the obsession, what happens is they've entered the household. They've created a sense of terror, a sense of fear, and now they pick somebody. They have their target.
Sort of like the government.
Go ahead.
Sort of like the government.
Yeah, kind of.
Yes. Okay.
Just so
exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly like the government.
So far what I have is stage 1 then would be ladybugs. Okay. Stage 2 would be Calvin Klein or the government.
Obsession, right.
Right.
And that's phase 2 in obsession. What they do is they pick that person out and they begin to wear that person down. That's where the violent attacks come in, the scratching, keeping them up at night.
How about a kidney stone?
What's that?
How about the 6 month
yeah,
long?
Yeah, okay, there you go. There you go.
Oh, yeah. No. So yeah. I don't need Bert to come help me with my ladybug problem. I need the Catholic Church.
Possibly.
That's what they want you to think.
That's right. And it depends on the religion. So.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I'll just let you go on because I'm getting a little freaked out here.
So what they'll do is they'll wear that person down. You see levitations. You'll see them being kept up, terrorized. They'll start seeing things, shadow, black masses, that type of thing. And a lot of the times it will be only visible to that person. But that person's life will exist in a state of terror. And other people around will notice signs. They'll begin to pick up smells, terrible smells, rotting flesh smells, things like that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Rooms will drop extremely cold. They'll get cold temperature-wise, things like that. This is during obsession. And the final stage is possession. When the person's will has been worn down to a point, then they're possessed. And there's been old studies done, old, and I mean old. We're talking 1500s here. And I think I did an article on this about a year ago. Demonologists of the time, that was a popular thing to do. Everybody was possessed, so we're either going to execute them or exorcise them. If they can't be exorcised, then we're going to kill them. So no problem, but that's what they did. And there were a lot, and they wrote a lot of treatises on demons and possessions and things like that. But they noticed a lot of these signs, and while a lot of the work that they did was, of course, biased to the religion of the time. Like there was one French demonologist who did a work, and I noticed they had established a pantheon of demons in a hierarchy based on a heavenly hierarchy, which supposedly in heaven you have hierarchies of angels, and they came up with a hierarchy of demons. And interestingly, all the demons that were in this hierarchy had French names. I could never figure that out, but okay. Yeah, that's what I said. Imagine that. But anyway, some of the information you can glean goes way, way, way back. And we go back again to the early Sumerians and those crazy Babylonians who just seemed to had all kinds of weird spiritual stuff, especially crazy encounters with demons and gods and ghosts and all. But
that must have been way back when MTV must have
the start of Jersey Shore is probably when it happened. Hey, I have a question, a real question.
Okay.
I know, like a legitimate question.
All right.
So I was wondering, because you were saying that the Catholic Church has sort of pumped up their whole crew. I just lost the word exorcism crew. My God, I just had a 44-year-old woman senior moment. Anyway, but you were saying that the Catholic Church has built up this crew of exorcists that they have. And the other thing that I've noticed is that there definitely seems to be a trend towards belief. So do you think that the reason that the Catholic Church feels they need more exorcism is because more people seem to be, because times are tough, and so more people are turning to belief in God and things.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to know what kind of role you think that belief plays.
It's very possible. psychologists, as most people are aware, have studied this forever. Dissociative personality disorders, it's been attributed to, and that type of thing. And some sociologists have actually done studies on this based on that, where belief is increasing and people are running into hard times and that type of thing. And it always seems to correlate. Once again, you asked a question about history, and this correlates with history, and you see it. You can plot it on a bell curve perfectly. Every time there's hard times, people face hard times, either economic, financial, that type of thing, wars, whatever, you see a higher enrollment in churches and spiritual belief. People tend to turn towards spiritualism during those times. So, it very well could be.
And the spiritual, didn't the spiritualist movement, I mean, it's not just belief in God, it's belief in other things as well, like ghosts and things, because didn't the spiritualist movement increase the last time during kind of times that were tough like this?
During the Depression.
Yeah.
Late 20s and early 30s, and big spiritual movement. Mediums were popular, psychics. It was a thing to do. You went out Saturday night, and people held seances and things, and that was a thing to do, you know? It was a happening thing. And a lot of, fakes were out of that. Houdini exposed a lot of those. In fact, he devoted his latter life to that, exposing these fakes and things. But, you see that, and it's pretty cool. But it very well could be, and that could be the reason you see more people turning to faith. They start believing in these types of things, and maybe, it could be part of it is psychological. But even psychologically, exorcism has been proven to help people. Because if somebody psychologically believes they're possessed, it's logical to assume that they psychologically believe that an exorcism will relieve them of that possession.
So it's basically a psychological placebo.
Well, a lot of times, in a lot of cases, is some cases real or some cases not real? I don't know. I'm not the person for that. I don't know. It's just a facts, ma'am. You know what I mean?
Right. On Ghost Adventures, the show, they sometimes when somebody gets scratched in a scratch of threes and Zach hysterically screams, "Oh my God, their shows are mocking the Trinity." Is that like what you were talking about earlier?
Like what I'm talking about, but it doesn't necessarily mean what you're seeing on TV is actually it.
Oh, I know.
There's a lot of, oh my God.
Wait, what? TV's not real?
Yeah, you know how I feel about that. You know, we're not even going to get into methodology and stuff. But
I'm stunned.
It's you get these guys, and that's what I meant earlier when I'm concerned, because people, it's been documented, and this is documented. People have been killed. They've lost their lives through this. Now, if that's a psychological belief or a fiction or affliction, it's like that's a pretty strong one. And it's possible that that can happen. It's possible. And I know in the shamanistic cultures where these things possess, a lot of people will be cured by this when the shaman does this. And they vary. Depends on what they're doing and how they do. Like, for one, there's a tribe in East Africa. I'm glad I'm not a member of this tribe. One of the things they believe is coating the person who's possessed in human excrement and making them leave that on for 3 or 4 days. Now, if that person dies, it's probably from disease or something. But I'm going to tell you what, if I was a spirit, I'd stay away. And I know everybody else is going to stay away.
If I was a person, I'd stay away.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, come on. But, that's a belief, and it cures these people. Maslovsky was a famous cultural anthropologist who did a lot of ethnologies on cultures like that. And he was studying the belief and use of magic within these cultures. And he recorded a lot of these rites as they happened, and they were so interesting. But he made the determination, and I tend to believe this, that a lot of these were psychological. These people believed this because, like I said, they believed, they had a very primitive belief as far as spirits, and spirits inhabited everything and had to be appeased. And there was a certain set rule that you have to follow in order to prevent these things. And once that rule was not followed or broken, then you could be possessed. And, interestingly enough, in Christianity, it's the same thing. You have a set rule that the demon's supposed to go by. And some priests believe, and I don't understand this, basically. But they believe that you cannot be possessed unless a demon has permission to possess you.
So why would something as nasty as a demon that, you know, that churches warn us about, why would it follow us a protocol? I have trouble with that one.
That I do too, but that goes way back. It goes way back to the name, the symbolism. When they had the name, they were bound to you, almost by contract. It's like they were following rules.
Okay.
All right, you've got my name. I have to play by, like a leprechaun. Look, that came into culture too.
Like Rumpelstiltskin.
You know, yeah. You find the leprechaun, he's got to give you the pot of gold.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Rumpelstiltskin. Yeah. Didn't want people to know his name for some reason. Maybe that was a tale. Maybe that was actually a demonic tale or something.
It could have been. And a lot of those were the original Brother Grimm fairy tales were actually Grimm. That's why they called them that. I mean, they're modernized. What you see now, they're modernized. But
I know. I've read some of the originals.
They're pretty grim. Yeah, they were scary.
Where does the Ouija board fit into all this? Because you hear about all these things about Ouija board possession.
Right. The reasoning with the Ouija board is that it's understood and believed that Satan and his minions have one goal, and that is the downfall of man. They hate man. Man is a creation of God, and Satan feels displaced by the creation of man, and that was supposedly the heavenly war that took place, and him and his minions were cast out of heaven, and for eternity now, anything they can do to destroy man, they will. They're liars, supposedly. They lie.
Okay.
No truth, that type of thing. So with that understanding, by using a Ouija board, people feel that you are inviting or opening a path for spirits and negative energies to come in. And it's been said time and time again, people have used it, and they made contact with a little girl, and they contact this little girl, and they talk to him, or a little boy, or whoever, and it goes okay for a while. Then all of a sudden, it turns terribly evil, and it turns out to be a negative energy.
Sounds like a good movie.
Yeah, well, they've done movies like that, I think, if I remember right. I couldn't tell you that, but...
Tell me this, then. If that's the case, then how is using a Ouija board any different than an EVP session? Because you do the same thing. You invite contact. You try to communicate. How's that different?
That was my next point. I don't see a difference. Okay?
Uh-oh.
I don't see a difference. Is there?
Nope.
Okay. I don't think so. I don't either.
I don't either. So how do you know?
I guess you have to just... hope you don't open the gates of hell and allow
there
all
you
the
go that I you know that's a thing. I mean, if you're going to accept that type of reasoning with your Ouija board, then it's logical to assume that by doing EVP sessions and that type of thing, or inviting these spirits, it's doing the same thing, wouldn't it be?
I think so.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows? But it's, you know, you have to take it. It's all based on your belief system. That's what it all comes down to. It's your belief system, what you believe. And, you know, there's some people that want absolutely nothing to do with the paranormal in any way, shape, or form. They're absolutely terrified. And they're terrified for the very reason we're speaking of right now, when it comes down to it. But then there's other people like us who just jump in with both feet and say, okay, here we are, let's go at it.
And then wind up with Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever.
But that was a stupid box, okay?
Oh, JD, you just mocked.
And I didn't invite nothing, all right? I was just there, okay? I happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's all I can say.
So this box is evil?
Oh, the Dybbuk box?
Oh, okay.
So basically it's a Jewish wine cabinet, and it has all sorts of interesting things attached to it. You can go back into our archives on the website and listen to the radio show about it. And we actually did a podcast and a radio show. Well, JD was involved in that first podcast, and he was quite skeptical about it. So here's my question, JD. Your experiences with the Dybbuk box, where you had this tornado warning and you had all of these things happen. And I recall I was talking to you at the time and there were a lot of things going on. Do you think that that was something that you was, do you think it was psychological? Do you think it was just, I know you think it was a little beyond coincidence, or but do you think that...
Yeah, it wasn't psychological because everything was physical. You know, with the Rocky Mountain spotted fever, that's definitely not psychological. The tornado warning wasn't. But then again, look at it this way. You know, where I live, we have a lot of tornadoes.
Right.
A lot. So, right. Okay, no big deal.
Right.
There's a lot of ticks that are infected with Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
And you spend a lot of time outdoors.
And I'm outdoors all the time. Mm-hmm. So, okay, number two. The other things, just occurrences, the weird thing was how they occurred one right after the other, in really rapid, quick succession.
It was pretty fast, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, is it or is it not? A skeptic would say,
Imagination. It's confirmation bias, right?
And a believer would say, see, it's cursed.
Right.
You are cursed. The box is cursed. Everybody is cursed, you know.
Right.
And what do you believe?
Right. So I have a question from the chat room. Rob wants to know if you think that the Ouija board is safe to use.
Yep, I just answered it. I don't.
You typed it.
Yeah.
You have to say it. Okay, and can you, what, so you don't feel that it's safe, so you don't think EVP sessions are safe either then?
I'm not going to say they're safe or not, but it's just me, and I am a, you know, yeah, I'm a scientist, but I'm a little superstitious too.
Yeah.
And I tend to look at some of that stuff, and I wouldn't want to use a Ouija board. Whether it's safe or not, I don't believe in it, tell you the truth. I mean, that's just me. I wouldn't use one. But there's been documented cases, and this is what gets me, and I can't dispel them, I can't defame them, and I can't confirm them. But they're there, of people who've used Ouija boards and bad things have happened. So
they're not
to me, it's right. It's like, you know, if you're hauling nitroglycerin and you know that one day that's going to explode, you're going to haul it anyway, right?
Right.
Take your chances.
Yeah.
So when do you stop hauling nitroglycerin? Do you wise up or do you keep doing it? You know,
it depends on the pay.
Right. Yeah. You know, so I mean, personally, it was a personal question. My personal opinion, I wouldn't use one. That's just me. You know, a lot of reasons for it, but I wouldn't.
How about magic eight balls?
Yeah. Oh, I got one of those. I have one.
Okay,
I
so
use it all the time.
All right.
Because
all
right. You know what? What's he going to do? Get in there and turn it to what? Now, if I use a magic eight ball and, you know, all of a sudden it, one of those little answers that you become so familiar with, you know, it's going to be one of eight. And you look at it and all of a sudden it's, you know, hi, I'm a minion of Satan and, you know, you're in trouble or something. Then, yeah, I'm going to throw it down and say crap.
That'd be freaky.
Yeah, but, you know, something like that, that's not even, that can't be paranormal. So, I mean, some people can say, yeah, paranormal can manipulate it, but no.
So how about seances?
I don't know. People conduct them. I personally, I have a hard time believing in mediums and psychics. And usually it takes a medium or a psychic to conduct a seance. So I don't put a lot into that.
Okay.
I got rid of some psychic callers one time, in fact.
Some psychic what?
Callers. You know how they'll call you?
Yeah.
Psychic hotline, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
The first thing I said, you know, if you were really psychic, you'd know I wasn't interested and wouldn't have called in the first place.
Oh, they called. Wait, they called you?
Yeah. You know how they'll call, like telemarketers.
No, I've never ever been called by a psychic. That's weird.
I think it's illegal in Washington State.
Yeah,
I've been stalked by psychics, but I've never called them. So
I'm.
Yeah.
Now there are some people. There have been some good studies done on psychic ability. And there are some people that do display what a seemingly psychic ability, and I can attest to that. And that part I do believe, and I believe that they're out there. But there are too many people who jump on the bandwagon and claim their sight.
Yes, you're absolutely. And
that's hokiness. I mean, I want to see the proof. You know, when you get a 13-year-old girl who can identify every card in a 52-card deck on the other side of a blind and they're not in order. I mean, come on. That's beyond.
I have to tell you, Tanner's dad did that once.
And that's crazy.
It was bizarre because I was talking to somebody online back in the day when I was married to him, and he said, "Is this person a blonde woman?" And I was like, "Well, yeah." He said, "You know, I think I might be a little bit psychic." And I said, "Well, let me get a deck of cards." And, you know, I had him turn his back to me, and I would turn up a card and look at it. And by God, he did like 15 cards in a row before I was like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah, it's weird, and some people do have that ability, and it's really interesting. But, you know, and there's people who study and argue that we all have that ability. It's just not unlocked, and that's a possibility. But, you know, that's within the realm of science. So,
what did you say?
Go ahead. Normal investigating. I mean, you're already looking for something that's questionable. And you're just adding more question to what you're looking at by adding in a psychic. That's always been my on using psychics. But we've met over the summer alone, we've met a few people that really kind of, they don't claim to be psychic, they claim to be sensitive, but and they seem to get things right. But they're also first to say, hey, you know, this is a guessing game. And those are the I tend to agree with.
Yeah, they're not the ones who are, you know, telling you that they see a person in a plaid dress who's, you know,
his name is
Susie. It's
not spot on. That's the thing. And even the remote viewers, and if you're familiar with that, the government actually used these people.
Yeah, isn't that the men who stared at goats? That was something else.
No, I don't know. I never seen the movie yet. Okay. I've seen the previews, but they can actually sit in a room and draw things.
Right.
Of places they've never been and seen, but they'll tell you the same thing. It's more of not so much guessing, but they use not instinct, but it's a feeling they get, and they'll draw, and they're not always right, and they'll tell you that. But some of them have a higher success rate than others, a much higher success rate, you know, approaching like 80% or better, and that's when it gets interesting. As a scientist, you look at it and you go, there's more going on here than meets the eye. You know, these guys, when they say they're claiming they have this ability and they can prove that by doing things like that, then you've got to accept there's something going on. And
this needs to be put in.
Or what, Bert?
Or have a better imagination, one of the two.
Yeah, there you go. You know, the SpongeBob imagination.
Well, so. I will tell you that I have taken psychic tests online, and I am here to report that I have not a lick of ability.
Oh, I don't.
I can't do anything. I can't make the little clock go in the direction I want it to. I can't guess what the cards are going to be. I can't come up with the right pictures for remote viewing. I'm really, really bad at being.
Well, you know what that is, Karen? That's Windows Vista that's doing that to
you. Hey, I have a Mac.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. That's a Mac that's doing it too. With Windows Vista.
Well, you know, I've worked with some psychics who have impressed me. And I've worked with some where they seem like they're doing a little more shooting around in the dark. Okay, so somebody has a question from the chat room. Let me see. It says, it just scrolled up. Hang on. Chad said, see question in chat room, so I was reading it. But of course, somebody typed something and it made it go off my screen. Seriously, this demon thing, if they're real, don't you think that telling everyone to fear them because they can't stand up to them would only increase the fear of them?
No, that would be forewarned is forearmed. I mean, what can you do? That's the thing with possession. It's like a lot of people, and there's been people that were pious, very religious, very devout, who were possessed. So you don't know, you know, who's going to be possessed and who isn't. I guess everybody, if you believe, is going to be susceptible. If you don't believe, then, you know, you're not susceptible if that's your belief system. But, you know, you can't tell somebody to believe in something and not believe in something. They're either going to believe it or not on their own. I mean,
right.
You know, it's one of those things. To me, it's like faith. It's a personal choice, okay? You're either going to believe in it or you're not going to believe in it. So if
well,
you believe
I do not,
in
the, I do not believe, by the way. I think I've shared that with you before. I don't believe demons, and I don't believe in Satan. And, you know, my belief in God isn't similar to what most people's is. So, yeah, you know, so I don't believe.
Right, and I understand that. And that's, you know, that's the whole thing with this. You don't, if you don't believe, then, you know, you don't believe. But if you do, then, you know, how can that increase your fear if you already believe? Okay, you have a fear, and an inner fear or respect or whatever, based on that, what you believe. And if you don't believe, it wouldn't matter one way or the other.
So, well, you fear what you can't see, and you fear what you don't understand.
But that goes back in time. We've always feared what we can't see and what we don't understand, what we don't know. And that is, to me, the basis for a lot of things, is the lack of understanding, because as human beings, we have to make sense of everything within our worldview, and we have to come up with explanations. And for those things that we cannot understand, then we come to within reasoning of it based on the best understanding that we can come up with. And you see that happen a lot, especially, you know, throughout history. You look at these things, people will make up things about something they don't understand. Not make up, make believe, but...
No, but they'll tell stories.
And they take what they know at the time to make a rational sense of it. And it doesn't mean that it's right. So,
right.
You know, it happens, but...
Right. Yeah. So, JD, I sent you a little blurb about our lightning round. Are you thinking that you're ready to participate? Did you get my little blurb about it?
I'm looking right now. I don't
know. I'll tell you. You don't have to read it. I'll tell you. Basically, I have a few questions, and we just kind of go around the chat room and or the chat room. We go around those of us who are on the show, including Cheryl, who will be turning on her mic at any second.
Hi.
And we just take a couple sentences to answer them.
Okay.
So one of them is a link that I sent you guys. Cheryl, do you have that link that you can paste into the chat room when we get to that question?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. So first of all, JD, this is something that we have actually discussed before, but it's been in the news this week. 2012 has been postponed.
Okay.
I know. You've been saying this for years, but it's like I say, it's been very widely reported because there's a new book out. And the book talks about how the Mayan calendar was calculated and that it could be off as much as 100 years in either direction, which means that we could have either already perished in 2012 or we may not perish in 2012 for another 102 years.
Have you heard that before?
Yes, I have, because you told me that. But so this is what I want to know. Since this is the case, do you guys think it would be okay if I stopped building my underground shelter and stocking it with canned food? JD, we'll start with you.
Absolutely. Stop.
It's okay. Do you want to explain that a little further real quickly before I move through the rest
of... Well, with the Mayans, and I'm very familiar with this, nobody knows exactly when that calendar starts. It's all assumption. We think maybe it started here, maybe it started there. It could be way off, so we don't know. How do you know, based on a calendar, you have no sure date that begins when 2012 is?
Right, right.
It could be 1,000 years from now. It could have been 20 years ago. It could
be. Which means we're all dead. Dun, dun, dun.
It could be today. We don't know. So, you know, that's the one thing that a lot of the people who were supporters of 2012 and who probably still are failed to mention in a lot of their books. But, you know, that wouldn't sell their books.
Right. Well, somebody has actually brought it out in a book. So let's go on to Bert. Bert, can I stop building my bunker?
No, because, you know, those little Asian beetles that are inside your house are going to take over the world.
Yeah, well, I think that they might. And, you know, the other thing is that I'm thinking that if I am indeed in the first few stages of possessions, I can just go down there and hide out.
Lock yourself in.
That's right. And then they can't get to me because I'm pretty sure that Satan and demons cannot get through a locked door. I'm certain of it. So,
I don't know. I'm getting a psychic reading right now that Jim's gas is going to get much, much worse in 2012. So
Well, yeah, but we don't know. Like in the real 2012 or the 2012 that we don't know when it's going to occur.
No, the make-believe one.
Oh, well, hopefully it's 1,000 years then, and then Jim will be gas anyway, so no worries. So, Cheryl, what do you think about my bunker?
I think you need to keep the bunker and keep stock in the canned food because you can never be too prepared, but I think 2012 is not the end of the world or even 100, 200 years down the line. It's not going to be the end.
Okay. All right, so... What do you think? This isn't on your list. I'm sorry, guys. I'm going off the beaten track. What do you think is going to be the end, JD?
Who knows? Well, I know one end for certain. One end that is a given fact. We can't get away from it, and it's not death. But eventually, our sun will start to lose the hydrogen it uses to process, and then it goes through a phase, it becomes a red giant, and it will actually consume the Earth. It will get that big, it will take the orbit. So, but that's not going to happen for billions of years. So that's one end. That is going to happen. That will happen.
Yeah, they actually were just talking about that and like the ways the world could end in Discover Magazine last month. Okay. So Bert, what do you think is going to be the end?
I don't know, but you know what? I think we're going to do it no matter what it is. And when it does happen, there's going to be somebody there that said, I told you so.
It'll probably be Jim. So, Cheryl, what do you think will be the end?
I keep having this recurring nightmare, and it's Chad, Jim, and Bert. And they're all three together in the future, and...
The three horsemen of the apocalypse.
There's so much gas generated that it just, the world just implodes. It just can't take it.
All righty. So moving on to the next one. So Cheryl, if you want to post that link in the chat room, and hopefully the rest of you guys got a chance to look at this picture, and actually post it in the thing so that JD can look at it too, or unless JD, you have that email. No. So the Sydney Morning Herald reported that a Google Street View camera captured an anomalous object in the sky, and a lot of people think it looks like a manifestation of God. So I want to know, what do you think? Did God appear to let us know that he approves of the Google Street View? JD?
That looks like it's been Photoshopped to me.
Looks like a Photoshop to you? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, Bert?
You know, I think a bug hit the windshield. They hit the windshield wiper right when the camera went off. You got a smear of a bug.
Oh, it's a bug. They're always bugs, darn it. Always. Cheryl?
It looks like the Grim Reaper and, like, some strange young child at his side. Doesn't it?
Looks like Bill Murray.
I thought it looked like a pair of hands.
Oh.
Folded in prayer.
It looks like
but
two
that's
people
because
to
I'm
me.
I'm so
but...
pure and holy.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I didn't get through it with a straight face. No,
it's a weird photo.
I'm smiling or not, I am. All right.
The first stage, Karen.
What's that?
That's the first stage.
Oh, God. Okay. All right, so moving on. I have been feeling a lot of relief this week. Something that's been bugging me for years now and really stressing me out, and it's finally been solved. The Vatican declared that Homer Simpson is a Catholic. So here's my question for you. What do you think the Family Guy's family, the Griffins, are if Homer is a Catholic, JD?
He's Methodist. He's got to be.
He's a Methodist. Okay. Yeah. Bert?
Jamie said to say Mormon.
Mormon. They don't have enough kids, do they? Well, I suppose that's, you know, they don't all have lots of kids, so. They do have a talking dog who's an atheist, though.
That's true. I think I saw the show twice, so I'm blown up.
Okay, so Cheryl, what do you think they are?
But
I think they're definitely Scientologists.
Well, they need a replacement because apparently somebody was telling me that John Travolta no longer is, so there you go. All right, so police in Spokane, Washington this week surprised residents because they chased a moose through the town. Here's what I want to know. What is the strangest thing that you have ever seen walking through your town, JD? We take the lightning round really seriously, can you tell?
I understand. Yeah, that's cool. I seen a woman one morning who was jogging backwards. And I couldn't figure that out. Yeah,
Working her calves.
I've never seen her again. Figuring she might have pitched over backwards into a damn ditch or something. But she was like jogging backwards. And I'm like, what's up with that?
That's a little odd. Okay, Bert, how about you? You live in Gold Bar. It's got to be all sorts of weird things in that town.
Yeah, I think somebody's sober.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that strange or is that out of character?
That's totally strange and out of character. Most people are either high on meth or drunk, one of the two.
So which are you right now, or is it a little of both?
I've had some Frosted Flakes, so I'm feeling pretty good.
All right, you're on a sugar high. So Cheryl, you live down in La La Land, so I'm sure you've seen some strange things.
Yeah, well, going with the animal thing, we don't have any moose here, but we do have coyotes. And this was just really strange because we don't see a lot of wildlife around here. But one time during my son's Little League game, broad daylight, middle of the afternoon, a coyote just comes down the hill and starts trotting around the baseball field. It was
really
kind of odd. Yeah.
So the strangest thing that we've had in our town, and we live in a pretty small town, is that there's a guy that from February to, probably like November or so, walks outside in Speedo and tennis shoes and nothing else. Tanner calls him Harry Banana Hammock.
Nice visual.
So that's our strangest thing. And somebody asked me how Tanner came up with Banana Hammock, and I my response was I was afraid to ask.
I was too.
Oh, yeah. So Harry Banana Hammock is strange, but a daily sight here in Chehalis, Washington. If any of you would like to come down to beautiful Chehalis, sit down on Market Street and you too will see him pass. There you go. Okay, so on Monday, a sewer worker in Missouri was accidentally disconnected from his safety line and he was sort of flushed through the sewer pipes. He was rescued. He's fine. He's on antibiotics in case he swallowed a little bit of sewage. But here's my question. What's the biggest or strangest thing you've ever flushed, JD?
Oh, that's tough. I don't know. I can't remember, really. I mean, I'm sure I've flushed.
This is where Rick would have come in handy, because Rick, I'm sure, would have had a really good answer for this.
I'm going to take the fifth.
All right. So we know what it was, and he cut back on fiber, and everything's fine. Bert, how about you?
You know, funny you should mention it, because I had a flashback of the 80s when the cops showed up at my door on some stark, dark, stormy night. No, flushed, I would say, 18 grams of ground gremlins.
Very nice. Okay, Cheryl, how about you?
Well, I don't know if it's weird, but it's sad. I had to flush a fish once.
Well, everybody's done that. Yeah, we have every once in a while, the cat will. We had a cat who would, she figured out that she could come into our basement and bring us gifts, and she would shove them under the basement door. There was just enough of a gap at the bottom. And so I'd stagger down the hall in the morning, and there'd be some half-dead critter dragging itself down the hall towards me.
Oh my god.
And so yeah, and sometimes they weren't half dead, sometimes they were entirely dead. And so I didn't flush them because I will not actually touch dead things, which is funny when you think about my, you know, the fact that I like ghosts. But Jim has flushed rodents for me. Dead rodents, not the live ones. Eesh. So,
aren't those too big to be flushed?
No, we have, oh my God, we have this toilet. It's called the Kohler Cimarron. And honest to God, this toilet is amazing because it has like that super flush, but it's the low water super flush. I will tell you how amazing this toilet is one time when we were at Home Depot looking at toilets, and I was standing there looking at this super flush Cimarron toilet, four or five men walked by and were like, oh my God, that's an awesome toilet. So,
industrial strength, huh?
Apparently so, yes. It's upstairs in the bathroom that Tanner and Jim use, and so I don't spend a lot of time with the Cimarron, and I think that's okay. All right. It's
the colon extractor?
Yeah. Well, you know what I want to do is my goal with the Cimarron toilet is that I totally want to stick one end of the toilet paper in, because you're supposed to be able to flush something like 1,000 yards of toilet paper or something. So I want to take one of those triple rolls of toilet paper and stick the end in and flush it and watch the thing go whee and we're the toilet paper, but I've never done it. So
you need to videotape that. Put that online.
I really should give it a try. I have a hunch what would happen is the toilet paper would break, but I have this image in my mind of how it would actually look. Hey, they're asking for a link to the Cimarron in the chat room. Apparently a lot of men want to worship at the Cimarron. All right, so I have another rogue animal story for you. Just yesterday this happened, as a matter of fact. The Kansas City police chased a crazed chimpanzee around town, and the chimpanzee sort of attacked the cops, and then he flipped them the bird. So if you could teach your pets any gesture, word, or phrase, what would it be, JD?
Bite me.
Okay.
There you go.
How about you, Bert? What would you teach all those kitties?
Get out.
with you mean for them to understand when you say it, or do you mean like
for them to? No, like, I would.
They could do it with a head spin and pea soup. Get out. That'd be awesome.
That's what it would happen.
Oh, that'd be cool. If you get that, let me know. I'll be stopping by so that I can watch that. So, how about you, Cheryl?
Well, if I had a chimp, I'd teach him to play the bongo drums and say Matthew McConaughey is hot. What? You asked?
That was like almost surreal. Like, am I back on the Percocet again?
No.
Hey, oh my you God. Asked. So guess what, you guys? I don't have any more lightning round questions, and we have like 10 minutes. So now we just get to sit and talk. What do you guys want to talk about? That will be entertaining. What?
Nothing. Corn.
Corn.
Yes. Let's talk about cornfields. Okay. I'm kind of kidding, but they're actually doing the fall harvest in Gold Bar, Sultan startup. You know, all those small little towns of the. Extraction of the corn husks.
Yeah,
I was covering up my porn comment.
Oh, you said porn. Yes. I thought you were maybe talking about earlier references that we have perhaps made to porn and paranormal things.
Oh, no, you said I said porn, you said what? And I thought, no, I better not say that. Let's say corn, and then it just kind of into this area.
You just kept digging yourself in deeper. Yeah.
So I'm just going to tell you the truth, and I'm a demon.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Oh, there you have it. So, JD.
Yes.
You have any, you want to talk about like vampires or something for a minute? Because you have all sorts of good news or good information about vampire lore and shapeshifters and stuff too, as from a cultural perspective, right?
Yeah.
It's almost Halloween. Yeah. Let's talk about something spooky.
Yeah, we can do Halloween for a little bit if you want to.
Yeah, just cool. A minute.
I love Halloween. That's one of my favorite holidays, if you want to call it a holiday. But as a kid, and that's why I loved to go trick-or-treating. That was one of the fun things. And even today, if I could go and get away with it, I would. I would still go trick-or-treating. It was just a lot of fun. But, you know, the holiday originated because of, once again, because of Christianity. The church was trying to absorb pagan religions, and it was a celebration of paganism at the time, All Hallows Eve and things. They believed that spirits would rise at night and there were offerings made to appease him and things. And it was incorporated and accepted as Halloween or Hallowmass. And they would celebrate a mass to replace the symbolism or the pagan rituals. Well, you know, that kind of didn't work. Some people went to mass, but some people still maintained the pagan rituals. But, you know, a lot of things have varied from culture to culture down through the ages about how it's celebrated and that type of thing. And it's a lot of neat myths and legends and stories that go along with it. And it's just pretty neat, you know, to look into it. And
So what are you going to be for Halloween this year, David?
Nothing. Katie? I mean, I'd love to get dressed up, you know, and go do something. But
anybody,
I don't know.
Bert, Cheryl, you guys have any Halloween outfit plans?
Yeah, I plan on going naked.
Yeah, and that's different from ever how.
Yeah, okay.
At least put on your pug undies.
Okay.
Yeah, no plans here. We're just going to hang out here. I don't think we're going to dress up or anything like that. But it's fun, though, to still dress up and go to Halloween parties and all that kind of fun stuff. But we don't do it often.
I used to dress my dogs up, but I don't do that anymore because I was told that that was not a nice thing to do to them.
I see.
I bet it was so cute, though.
Spike dressed up as a hot dog, and he made a really good hot dog.
You know, you had mentioned earlier about vampires.
Yeah.
You know, we talk ghost vampires, all that with Halloween. Do you remember the article I did on vampirism?
I do. That's why I asked you. Yeah, that's why I asked you about it.
The most interesting thing I found and out of that article and the research, because I didn't know this until I came across some of the research, was the thing about the Eastern European practice to find them with the pebbles. Do you remember that? That was so cool, where they believed that they were obsessed with picking up little things. And if you would leave a trail of very small pebbles from the graveyard into town, that when the vampire rose...
Right, it would distract them.
It would distract them. They would spend all their time picking these pebbles up, you know, before they could get to town and do harm to anybody. And,
clearly, the undead are not very smart then.
Apparently, yeah, that's what it seems like, you know, instinctual type driven. But that was pretty interesting, and I've still thought about that, wondered how they came up with that. I mean,
people come up with stuff.
Yeah, but still, you know, this is like old type.
I know.
Myth, and they did it. It was a practice. It's like there's nothing to even correlate it to. But
yeah, it's cool. So we need to wrap it up. So you don't have a website, JD, but you're going to be writing regular articles for the magazine again. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
Sweet. And do you have one in the works?
Yeah, I do. I'm actually working on one for the crypto fans on Bigfoot.
Right.
Sasquatch and that type of thing. And
tell you come out here and visit me. We go hunting.
I'm ready.
I know. I've been waiting for a couple of years for you to get out here. You still aren't here.
I am trying my best.
I know. So Bert is, of course, NWPIA.com, paradrama.com.
Area 50.
Area61.us.
At US.
Yeah. And Paranormal Comedy.
Right, paranormalcomedy.com.
Okay. All right. And Cheryl, what do we have coming up next week on the show, on the big show?
We have coming up next week on Paranormal Underground Radio, demonologist Dave Considine. And so I hope everyone tunes in. That'll kind of be another Halloween show.
Find a bunch of spooky Satan music. We're going to play Satan music all week.
Awesome.
Or all day, all show, okay?
Okay, cool. Yeah. And everyone, don't forget to check out paranormalunderground.net. And we've got the latest issue up online, so check that out.
Yes, and check out also the evidence from Wellington, the photograph from Wellington that we posted in our blog that somebody else captured up there. It's just click paranormalunderground.net and then click on the blog tab, and it should be the first thing that pops up. Okay, so next week, guys, thank you.
Thanks.
And Bert, thank you.
Thanks, cheers. Bert. Thanks, JD.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net. And join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.